Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 10th day of March 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. It's World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report Day. We'll update you on all the numbers as they came out from WASDE at 11 a.m. Central Time this morning. A bit later in the program, we'll take a look at ethanol and how it's being used in the marketplace and what its future might hold for this year and the coming years. That with the foremost expert in the field from right here on this campus, ag economist Scott Irwin. As we close out our day together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast too on this 10th day of March. Closing market report from Illinois Public Media right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, as you're probably aware, I'm not in the office this afternoon, but hosting the All-Day Ag Outlook over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, along with your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Just a couple of words on that event. If you did not get a ticket and you're wanting to hear some of it, you can do that later this week, most likely, at our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Over time, we will post all of the All-Day Ag Outlook to our website. So keep on coming back, and each and every time you visit, hopefully you'll find another segment from the All Day Ag Outlook. While you're there, do be sure to check out our calendar. That's a link either over on the right-hand side of the page or maybe down at the bottom, depending on how wide you have the screen opened up on your desktop or on your smartphone. Remember, willag.org works on both of those devices. You'll find several new and upcoming events, including one next week right here in Champaign County out at the Farm Credit Illinois building in Mahomet. We'll be there at 7 o'clock on Monday the 16th, along with Merrill Crowley, Bill Gentry, and Wayne Nelson. And our special guest will be John Newton, ag economist from the U of I. He'll take us through a PowerPoint presentation on the commodity markets. I hope you can make it not only to that one, but all of our upcoming events. And we'll be in Sherman, too, on the following week, on the 31st, a couple of weeks after that, actually, on the prospective plantings report date and grain stocks number. More about that later, but please do visit our website and check it all out at willag.org.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Let's check out the weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area. On Wednesday, we'll have partly sunny skies and we'll rise all the way to a beautiful 60 degrees. And then on Wednesday night, partly cloudy and 36. On Thursday, more sunshine again. Another gorgeous day on tap and 56 degrees. We'll have some light rain maybe on Thursday night with a 39-degree low. That rain will persist into Friday with a 40% chance. Under cloudy skies, we'll go to 55 on Friday for the daytime highs and then drop back to 38 degrees under cloudy skies with a 30% chance of some light rain on Friday night. Saturday will show us mostly cloudy skies and 55 degrees, mostly cloudy on Saturday night as well. We'll drop down to 33. When we get to Sunday, we'll see sunny skies and 51 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast for the growing regions around the planet when we get to the bottom of this half hour right here on Illinois Public Media. Of course, you can find our forecast anytime you'd like at willag.org. They're posted there twice a day, once during this program, the closing market report, but also in our morning programs and on the website. You can check out Drew Lerner's daily weather forecast as a podcast there at willag.org.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from the All-Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, where we have just had a magnificent day so far. Watch the world agricultural supply and demand estimates come out earlier this morning. The one number of note, Wayne Nelson, who's here, of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, is that they dropped U.S. ending stocks for corn by 50 million bushels. How did they come about that number?
Well, I think we increased the feed usage and the exports on that, Todd. We did drop the corn for ethanol some, though, so it totaled up to a 50 million drop as overall. So, but that's a pretty good size drop. That's going to reduce the carry out, and we're seeing a little bit of activity, a little push up in the corn on that.
In fact, we are at 1.777 billion bushels for our carryout for corn now. Not much of a change for soybeans. In fact, none for the day. And I saw that wheat changed by 1 million bushels. Nothing to speak of there. So really, beyond what is being built into the corn market at this time, not a lot to worry about with this WASDE number.
No. The world stocks, though, the corn did drop 4.3 million bushels, or 4.3 million metric tons. So that is something that we're going to look at that way. And we did raise the corn price about a nickel on the average price for the year, Todd. So, but the beans, I mean, basically right in there, there in the wheat, not enough change to really make any difference. But, you know, in Argentina, basically the corn stayed down just up a half million metric tons, and the beans stayed the same. We stayed the same as we were in Brazil as far as the corn and the beans went there. So, you know, all in all, it's sort of a non-event, just as, you know, forecasted here. Nothing much happens on this one, but, you know, at the end of the month, big-time news comes.
In fact, at the end of the month, the prospective plantings and the grain stocks report for the quarter will be out. We heard Chris Hurt this morning talk a little bit about livestock, its increased numbers in the United States. Could that really change domestic usage and what might show up as left in the bin in the quarterly grain stocks, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, as we increase the livestock herd, we, of course, increase feed usage. And that, of course, is going to be something, you know, we looked at a little bit of start on the report today. I think we're going to continue to see that continue to happen. You know, we saw the hog herd is building quite rapidly. We're going to see the chickens continue to do that. We just hope McDonald's announcement to only want organic chicken is not going to hurt our chicken business too bad. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff opening up, and I think we can see some usage for that.
Are your expectations for prospective plantings report to show acres for corn to be an increase or decrease from, let's go with the 88 million that Informa used earlier in the week?
I think the corn acres are going to be in that 88 to 89 million, somewhere in there, probably the, you know, that range. I think we're going to see probably a little increase from what the government said as far as the bean acreage. I think they won't be lower than last year. They'll be a little higher. You know, where are all the acres that were planted last year that weren't included in the Ag Forum's numbers? You know, where are they going to go? Are they going to go out of production? Are they going to go to Milo? Are they going to go to something different? But we see, think we'll see a little bit of pump up in the bean acres.
Are there things that producers should be considering this week in particular? We have until, what, I think Friday to finish up crop insurance decisions. And I know you've been talking to producers a lot. Do they need to be running at 80 or 85%? Is there a difference between corn and soybeans? And what have your recommendations generally been?
Well, you know, we've stayed pretty much the same as far as our crops have went here. I think the individual, depending on where they're at with the lower guarantees, a lot of the guys are saying take the highest insurance you can. We're looking at the individual and seeing what their banks are saying, too. But, you know, the 80 to 85% on the enterprise units is probably what we're looking at doing. You know, depending on your county and your individual fields, you might want to do the yield exclusion for the 1 year on a, like that, and be able to knock out 2012. And that can maybe raise your guarantee also. You know, unfortunately, insurance isn't quite as good a deal as it was the last couple of years when it insured a profit. This year, it just ensures you're going to be back in business next year.
And once they've done that, they'll have to get back down to the business of trying to figure out how much they have in their crop, what's the budgets look like, and then protecting that which is left to protect. Generally, that'll be 15 to 20% of the crop.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to be something we want to look at very heavily. We're much along the lines of looking at maybe buying some puts and selling a call or two above the market to give us some room to work up. We think there's a lot of chances for some weather problems. I think that as we talk about this increased feed usage, and, you know, let's look at, we don't know any what the spring and summer weather is going to be yet to pump up a little bit. But we don't think the market's going to go wild to the top. So we want to be ready to take advantage and do a little bit of pricing if we do see some rallies here. And the rallies, unfortunately, are talking more like 25 to 50 cents, not a dollar or more.
Hey, Wayne, thanks for all you do for us, for being here at the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, too.
Well, thank you, Todd. It's been 26 years in a row we've done this, and I think it's our largest crowd we've ever had here today, so it's a great thing, and keep it going for next year.
That's Wayne Nelson, of course, of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. If you've visited the Farm Doc Daily website very often, you've seen, of course, Scott Irwin's pinnings on biofuels. He's an expert in that area, an ag economist in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, and joins us now to take up the future of biofuels, biodiesel and ethanol in particular. Let's begin, Scott, with the price of crude oil. Has it and will it have an impact on ethanol usage and biodiesel usage in the United States in the coming months because it has dropped so substantially in price since last summer?
Well, on one hand, for ethanol, it's basically a completely different world. Previous to the crash in crude oil prices, you had the happy days situation for ethanol of pretty high gasoline and ethanol prices and relatively cheap corn, which was a prescription for record high profits. Biodiesel, a little bit different story. It's ordinarily not very profitable and not connected to the fortunes of crude oil and diesel prices. So it had a tough year in 2014, even despite seemingly favorable conditions.
Scott, can you pinpoint when the margin started to turn for ethanol?
Late in 2014, as crude oil prices and gasoline prices dropped precipitously. That put pressure, along with some other idiosyncratic market factors, on ethanol prices, and they eventually basically followed gasoline prices down. Corn prices were largely unaffected, so the profits were just very quickly squeezed out of the ethanol industry, and they evaporated.
Did the industry respond in any way at all?
Into very early 2015. Production has been at very high levels since the first of the year. Just in the last week or so, we may be beginning to see the first signs that the industry is adjusting and beginning to cut back production.
Do you suppose, Scott, that there's a point at which the cheap price of oil, however low that might be, and or the profitability margins within the ethanol plant might become a serious problem for the industry?
Interestingly enough, at the present time, it doesn't look like this situation will have much impact on the price of corn. Simply put, we were, for domestic ethanol use, regardless of the price of crude oil and gasoline, stuck at the E10 blend wall in terms of the amount of ethanol we were using. We were stuck there when we had high crude oil prices. We're going to remain stuck there with low crude oil prices because ethanol has two things going for it. On one hand, despite the fall in gasoline prices, it's still the most competitive source of octane enhancement for gasoline blends. And then there's the safety net of the renewable fuel standards that also keep us there at the E10 blend wall. So I don't think it has much, if any, implications for the price of corn.
Of course, there remain questions about RFS as a policy out of Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. It is interesting. It has relatively modest potential impacts on the U.S. ethanol industry because of the E10 blend wall. Unless you can forecast that higher blends are going to be adopted quickly, the amount of ethanol that we use is going to basically be determined by whatever the E10 blend wall is. The industry for which the RFS is really a life or death matter is biodiesel. Because if the EPA would choose to go back to the statutory levels of the RFS mandates, at least for a few years here in the short run, it would launch likely the biggest boom in biodiesel's history. But if they choose to stay on the path of the proposals from late 2013, it basically cuts the knees out from the industry. So they're sitting there right on the edge waiting to find out what happens.
Same area but different point now, Scott. How do you read imports of biodiesel from Argentina?
Very interesting. You know, the biodiesel industry and ag groups have taken that very negatively. And, you know, I understand where they're coming from. I look at it a little bit differently. I favor the position that the EPA is likely to move the mandate levels back up near or at the statutory levels, at least by 2015, if not 2016. That is going to necessitate a tremendous boom in biodiesel production, more than U.S. production capacity. So one view of the Argentine biodiesel announcement is that it's a precursor to them going back to the statutory levels, which would require that they can document that there's enough registered biodiesel production in the U.S. and outside the U.S. to fill the mandates. And so I won't be surprised if that turns out to have been an important signal about future EPA policy with respect to where they're going to set the RFS mandates. In other words, they knew they would need to register more biodiesel production to eventually fill these higher mandates, and this is how they did it. We'll have to wait and see if I'm right or not.
Well, now that we're on the international front again, what do you think about the price of crude oil? How long can it stay as cheap as it is, and what is the overall impact on ethanol and biodiesel?
I don't see much chance of crude oil from what the analysis that I've been reading going back up much higher than, say, $65 or $70 for the next 6 to 18 months. So I think that it means that you're looking at biodiesel being even more expensive than it usually is relative to diesel, and that will continue to put downward pressure on ethanol prices and ethanol production profits.
Let's switch gears now, Scott, from biodiesel and ethanol to a different subject matter, an article that you have written for the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu that deals with corn and yield. Can you take me through the process that you used to develop the data?
We wanted to take a long-term look at the history of corn yields in the U.S., U.S. average corn yields, to see what that history could tell us about forming expectations for the 2015 U.S. corn yield.
And can it tell us very much?
It can tell us a lot, but not nearly as much as everybody would like. As we look at the record, we took a look and see if we could detect any cycles. So if you were below trend last year, would you be above trend this year? Things like that. No real obvious patterns in corn yields from year to year. We also didn't see any pattern of what yield trend deviations would be in years following big crop years like 2014. Sometimes you'll hear people talk about, well, we had this extremely high yield. This was a big crop year, so we can expect something X bushels below trend. We really don't find any meaningful signal in the data about trend yield deviations in years following big crops. It just isn't much that you can extract out of the data.
And that thought usually, frankly, is prefaced with we had such big yields and prices were so low that we didn't put the fertilizer back on. And We just didn't put the fertilizer back on.
Exactly. And at an individual farm level, I'm sure that that can be true. But when you aggregate it up and consider the overwhelming influence of just the weather trends from year to year, I mean, we can document that following other big crop years, we've had very large positive yield deviations. Like in the mid-80s, we had a series of three straight years of record or near-record yields. But then there are a number of others where you get just the opposite. You get, like, 1979, a great year for those of us that are 70s people, record yields at the time, and then that was followed by 1980, which was a terrible crop.
Are there any items that do live up to this historical context or expectations?
Well, we take a very careful look at what we think is the soundest approach to estimating a trend yield, which is just extracting what you think technology trends have been on average. And our position is that the long term is the firmest foundation for those estimates. And so we use a sample from 1960 through 2014, and we end up with a trend yield estimate for the U.S. of 164 bushels an acre for 2015.
That's below USDA's trend.
Right, a little less than 3 bushels lower than the USDA. So an obvious question that arrives is why? And we think we have a pretty good idea of why. The models that the USDA uses start their sample in 1988, and that could have some impact because that was obviously a really severe drought, and that might pull the trend line down a little bit at the beginning, making it steeper overall. But I think the main reason is a little bit technical, but it's the way that they generate their trend yield estimates with their models. They basically assume perfect knowledge that average weather and planting progress is going to occur in 2015. And that will naturally push the yield estimate up compared to the way we do it, because what we know from the data is that good weather doesn't pull yields up as much as bad weather pulls them down. And so when you just assume that you're going to have average weather, you don't fully account for that difference in bad weather versus good weather on corn yields.
How does that then get put into your trends?
We do it is we use a typical trend line. You just basically use statistical methods to come up with a straight line relationship. And if you fit that to the last 55 years of data, that actually turns out to be a 162 bushels per acre estimate for 2015. We've worked a lot with crop weather models like the USDA uses over the years, and for some technical statistical reasons, there's a small bias when you leave out the weather part of the equation, like you do with just using yields on a time variable. And our experience and research shows that, that's about a 2 bushel bias. So we take the 162, add 2 bushels, and get 164.
So ultimately then, I suppose, as you've told me already, there is a 3 bushel difference between your expectations, your lower, than what USDA would normalize as the trend yield. We'll be watching this as we go forward through this growing season. Thanks so much, Scott, for taking the time with us. Scott Irwin, of course, is an ag economist at the University of Illinois, joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We'll be back in just 2 minutes to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
National Blueberry Popover Day. Food historians are in agreement. Popovers are an American recipe derived from Yorkshire pudding from 17th century England. The oldest known reference to popovers is in 1850, and the first cookbook to print a popover recipe was Practical Cooking by M.N. Henderson, published in 1876. Popovers were originally made by cooking the batter in custard cups, lubricated with drippings from roast beef or pork. On this day in agricultural history in 1845, John Chapman died. He was better known as Johnny Appleseed. An American pioneer, he planted apple seeds in the Ohio River Valley area of Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana. Appleseed planted nurseries rather than orchards, and he built fences around them to protect them from livestock. He obtained apple seeds for free from cider mills, and he went barefoot year-round. In 1867, Lillian D. Wald was born. She was a scientist and nurse, and among her activities, she helped initiate the enactment of pure food laws in the U.S. Wald also took on major industries, lobbying for health inspections of the workplace in order to protect workers. And in 1873, John Torrey died. He was the first professional botanist in the New World. A mountain peak in Colorado is named for him, and Torrey climbed the mountain for the first time when he was 76 years old, where he gathered alpine plants that he had named 50 years earlier. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Let's take a look now at the growing region's weather forecast around the planet. We'll start in South America, where today they went to a high of 94 degrees. Under mostly clear skies tonight, it'll be 70 in Argentina, this for Rosario, and then tomorrow, 93, Thursday, 94, 95 on Friday and Saturday, 96, Sunday, 97 degrees. It'll be very warm as they go through their harvest season in Argentina, and they'll drop to lows in the upper 60s with a mid-70s low by the time they get to the middle of the week. Next week, no rainfall in the forecast for Rosario and that area. If we move northward into Brazil, we see that they do have rainfall today, tomorrow, on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 100% chance of thunderstorms, although they'll have mostly light rain that daytime and evening, so some rainfall, not very good conditions for harvesting in those areas. The highs just in the upper 70s to low 80s in parts of Brazil. Overnight lows of about 60 degrees. That's in one part of Brazil. In another part of Brazil, of course, they'll continue to have rainfall as well. Their lows are, roughly speaking, in that same range of about 70 degrees. They'll be wet from Wednesday all the way through Sunday. So we'll look forward to some harvest delays in those areas as well. A bit closer to home, over the next several days, we'll have warmer temperatures. Highs Wednesday of about 60 degrees, Thursday 56, Friday chance of rainfall 40%, and a 55 degree high will drop down to 38 that night, by the way. And Saturday and Sunday, we'll have mostly cloudy to partly sunny skies with a high of 55 and 51 degrees, respectively. That's a look at the weather forecast for the growing regions around the planet, and well, at least a bit of what's going to be happening here in the Urbana-Champaign area over the next several days. Please do visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, and as the week passes this week and next week, you'll be able to listen in on the events that took place at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on this Tuesday. We'll post all of our programming there at willag.org. That's willag.org. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.